Welcome everybody to the last session of the seminar in the history of the book, hosted by the 15th Century Book Trade Project and the Center for the Study of the Book of the Bodleian Library. Our last speaker is Falk Eisermann, the director of the Gesamtkatalog der Digendrucke, and he will talk to us about his experiences in, did you mean incurable? Searching and finding incunabula in the World Wide Web. Falk.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you for having me, and thanks for dimming the lights, because otherwise you could see that I'm a little bit sort of red-faced here, because Christina was suggesting to me that there would be a handful of PhD students perhaps for this lecture, and I didn't expect all the royalties here, so my apologies for this being a somewhat informal and hopefully term-ending lecture, as it were, sharing the intention of that is to share with you some things that have been not bothering but keeping us busy in the past couple of, or just recently in the past 1.5 years. That is, as Christina said, I'm responsible for the Gesamtkatalog der Wiegendrucke, the Union Catalog of Incunabula, that has been working and being published and being work in progress for no less than 114 years now. And I'm very glad to be able to tell you that we will have finished half of all the incunabula cataloging by this summer, reaching the letters I and J. So after only 114 years, we've got like 14 or 15,000 descriptions out in the open, as it were. But still, there's much more to find. There's much more to catalog. And I think the initial idea for this was in last summer or so, when a colleague of mine, all of a sudden, and I will not talk about this in much detail today, maybe we can take a look later on. A colleague of mine, in just one afternoon's work, and by not leaving his desk, found 11 unknown Italian Venetian incunabula in a tract volume that had been digitized by the Marciana and had been cataloged as 16th century editions with no further comments. But then a closer look revealed that we had, basically a whole new Sammelband of unique copies. The champagne was popping in the Marciana as we spoke, so as it were. And then I suggested to Christina, when she invited me, that we have a tour de force through this famous thing called the internet, and in order to find more incurables, as it were. I haven't followed the German news for the past 2 days, but I think we haven't quite got a new government yet, but we are on our way. So it may be appropriate to start with a famous quote by our eternal chancellor, Angela Merkel, who said famously, well, the internet is all uncharted and new territory for most of us. And so that is probably true, not only for her, but in a way, it is absolutely untrue for incunabulists, because I think we were among the first people who came up with substantial databases and internet research facilities, such as the Gesamtkatalog database that went online in 2003 and the ISTC, correct me if I'm wrong, in 2005 or so. So we've two of the most major and substantial research instruments for 15th century studies have been online for about 15 or 12 years or 13 years now. And that is much more than many others can say, actually. So on the other hand, and that is what I'm sharing with you today, and that's mainly what I do, is I show you a lot of pictures of things that have been found on the internet recently. I will try to order them in three groups, or I have ordered them in three groups. And then I leave it at that and hope for your input and discussions, because there are some methodological, some bibliographical problems. Not that I want you to tell me what these incunables are, but how do we get to know, perhaps not everything, but most of what is out there in the wild world of the internet. So, well, the problem is, if we're interested in something as new in Qnabula, to just give you a rough idea. So today we think that there must be about 28,500, perhaps 29,000 in Qnabula editions proper. So that is books that were definitely or with much reliability printed before the ominous date of the of December 31st, 1500. And so the numbers have been going up and down over the years. There have been higher estimates and also lower ones, but I think we're pretty safe counting together the ISDC and GW averages and discounting the 16th century editions that are no longer considered incunabula but once were. So we're about there, 28,500. But in the last 3 years, in the last 3 years alone, about 250 new editions have been found. And we have a, still have a backlist, and for those of you interested doing some work at home, I can easily give you the list. We have a backlist of about 100 editions that showed up in either catalogs, digitizing projects, in fragments, in ominous marks in auction catalogs, ominous remarks in auction catalogs, stuff that needs to be processed and analyzed and has not yet found its way into Incunabula bibliography proper. So that leaves a sort of darkish area around the edges of the Incunabula proper that makes me decidedly uneasy. Because there's so much interesting stuff in there, as evident from this Marciana track volume, right? So one example, a finding that was made a couple of years ago in our own library was a little fragment in a small format of a what we can only call orations or prayers at this time. 15 lines, and we've got this and another individual leaf of this, of what must have been sedecimo, is that the correct format? Sedecimo? Sextino. So a very small prayer book, printed, as our type analysts found out, by the rather well-known printer, Johann Petri in Passau, and further to hitherto absolutely unrecorded, and as you can see, it was found in a number of uncatalogued fragment boxes that I think every or almost every major library has these. So they normally are located in what we call the dirty corners. So. Where nobody ever goes, and one day in 2013 we decided we go there, and I regretted it ever since, because that's a lot of work. I mean, one of these boxes contains about 100 or two, up to 150 uncatalogued fragments, all dislocated from their context, and so all in a sort of free-flying way, just like this one. There may be more fragments of this particular edition, but we haven't been able to find. So this is one of the situations where one says, okay, this has been very successful, but where will it end? Because in 95% of the cases, of course, what you find is things that you already know, Bible and liturgical fragments and other things. But the more astonishing it is that you can find stuff like this, and that stuff like this even survived. And the original is about this big, right? So a very, very small scrap of paper. Nigel, you get this for analysis.
It's liturgical.
It is in a way, but it is liturgical, but we've just put it under orationis because we had to put it somewhere, and the way someone comes up with a definitive source text for that, we'll put it in the correct alphabetical place, but in for the time being, that can also be something having to do with a psalterium or something like that, but right, so. And there are more substantial findings. It's not all fragments, right? So this is a quite considerable, more than 240 leaves, edition of the so-called Neue Ehe, a German biblical or para-biblical narration of events from the Bible that has been known in a number of editions for quite a while and has also been recorded in the GW quite a while ago. But the astonishing thing is that this is a completely unknown edition printed in Lübeck by Matthäus Brandis. And you see here a snapshot from the GW website. It's a bit small to read, but I've put the main data here. It's a quarto with more than 246 leaves and more than 99 woodcuts. So a pretty remarkable, substantial book. And above all, it's a book in the Low German vernacular, which is really an extremely rare finding. This was not found on the internet or so, but just simply sent by a Russian colleague inquiring what it could be. Other findings like that happen sometimes, but rarely on such a pretty spectacular scale, right? Another look. So that is the first page, and that also tells you where this book came from. This is a dislocated war booty from the Red Army that was taken from the seminary in Pelplin in Poland in 1945 and then found its, well, what we think, final resting place at the National Library in Moscow. And as you perhaps know, the Russians are pretty frank about their war booty. It's all now in the property of the state, so they do not hesitate or do not hide this away any longer, which is good for us, not so good for the people in Pelplin, who must have been missing this copy that showed up in all earlier catalogues but had not been properly described there. So these were two findings on the more conventional way, like people sending stuff to us or just we ourselves looking into our own holdings. But then things went pear-shaped because the social media came up. I don't know when they came up. I wasn't following them very closely, actually. I didn't think they could make a change or an impact, but actually they did. And so now comes a picture gallery of things that are all very recent findings, not all of them related to new incunabula, but certainly to new aspects of incunabula studies. First of all, you get funny comments like this one all the time, and I really recommend this colleague's Twitter account here, Jamos Keller. I don't know, do you know him? I haven't met him in person.
In person.
He seems to be an absolutely wonderful day, and so you see what he's found here is a German imprint for an edition by Anton Sorg, where lots of fingerprints, blackish, inky fingerprints can be seen. That is one thing that I really like about these social media accounts. There is a hashtag called Incunabula, or Incunibus, there are two hashtags actually, where stuff like this is being shown. And you can easily use it for didactic purposes, for example, because they all have wonderful examples, often with very, very good and very rare images, which otherwise would be hard to obtain. So that is definitely a very positive aspect, especially when you have got creative librarians who do a lot of teaching themselves, right? So you don't have to go to the books themselves and make inky fingers in them if you want to show them to your students. So this is just a recommendation, and I've just found out about this a couple of days ago, actually. So this is one finding that we found quite surprising. Very recently, the Philadelphia Art Museum declared that it also had an old book, and it showed it on Instagram, so that made it very easy to identify. 1494-5 Boccaccio edition, which is not very rare. There are about 200 copies of this wonderful book, richly illuminated book. But the one thing that we found particularly interesting is that the Philadelphia Art Museum had until then not been known as owning Incunabula at all. So that is also one task of the ISTC as well as the GW to sort of get together all Incunabula holding institutions and to keep things as up to date as we can on their holdings, you know, which is catching a sack of fleas or so, because things move around all the time, everybody knows that. And every now and then, and pretty often in the past couple of months, and especially on social media, owners come forward and saying, hey, this is our oldest book, this is the wonderful thing that we have, and now come and look at it. If you are lucky and they give you a number of images like this, this is just one of many from this edition, you can easily identify it if you know how to do that without getting to Philadelphia to look at the book itself. If they had only posted a note, because they are, of course, these people are not aware that there's such a thing as Incunabula bibliography out there, right? So they have an old book that is wonderful, and it's our task to bring this into the scholarly context that are the databases. And another example is this pretty rare breviary from Venice that has been posted on Twitter by the Barcelona Museo Nacional. And thankfully, they also provided a lengthy blog entry in English, not in Catalan. Yes, that was very helpful. With lots of images from this book, so that it was, even though, and they did some identifying work on this as well, which is very, very well done. And again, this collection had not been known as an Incunabula holding institution until now, which is quite surprising, given that Incunabula bibliography in Spain has been very, very intensive in the past 50 years at last, and it's getting more and more intensive as we speak. They are now having a new national cataloging project directed by the National Library in Madrid. So there will be more things to find, and these two things reminded me that museums are places where one really has to look, because often enough they have really representative holdings that have never been recorded or published anywhere, because they are just display objects and not study objects or books as we see them. And I think it's been a long-standing wish of mine or intention of mine to get some sort of questionnaire around for museums in Europe. What is your oldest book? Does it qualify as incunable? So have you ever heard this word, right? And there are very many smallish museums, perhaps this one is really big in Philadelphia as well, but smallish museums that have stuff like that that we even don't know. And then there's the problem of libraries not cataloging their stuff proper. So this was a wonderful thing. The guys in Antwerp, who are otherwise wonderful bibliographers and so, it took them almost 15 years 25 years actually, to catalog this acquisition of a pretty remarkable Sebastian Brandt edition. So I think the Dutch basically says, oh, we bought this in 1993 and forgot to catalog it, sorry. Well, at least they announced it later on. And so we have now not seen much more details from this copy, but there's an OPAC entry which makes it clear that this is really this GW number of a not so frequent one of the early Varia Carmina by Sebastian Brandt. And this is, of course, curious, because under the Incunabula hashtag, it showed an image from the year 1962, when a Schedel at Nuremberg Chronicle was donated to the New Hampshire State Library in Concord, and then completely forgotten until a couple of months ago, until this showed up. I don't know this date here, somewhere in 2017 or so. And this was not, I mean, Nuremberg Chronicles are by no means rare, as everybody knows. There must be about 1,300 copies on the record of the Latin edition alone. But this copy had not found its way into the records, and given that especially American holdings have been checked through and through, and this is a state library, it was quite surprising to see that by publishing it, they doubled their known incunabula holdings from 1 to 2, so not a mean feat. There's a couple more examples. Oh yes, the British Library also excelled. This book had been in the collection since 1823, John, can you believe that?
Yes.
And it's really a pretty, pretty rare Dutch edition. And if we believe the Christian Elgar's hashtag, then this had been only in the last summer or autumn or so, this was noticed on the shelves and well, put into the repertories. There are only 10 copies, so this is a pretty rare edition. Dutch edition from an anonymous printer, as you can see here. So lots of special features that make this book quite remarkable. And well, let's hope you don't have much more or many more of these kind of dirty corners in the British Library. No, not at all.
I'm sure there are.
But this is absolutely a fantastic finding, and I think it's also an appropriate way of putting it out in the open, except I don't know whether they remember. They certainly didn't notify us, but I mean, we have ways of finding things out. So that tells me, I mean, I'm not a Twitter follower, I don't even have an account, I don't go on Facebook, I don't do Instagram, not at all. I mean, my cell phone is even older than the GW is, so I can't do all this stuff. But you can follow this thing on the internet, and it's every week it's really getting more and more exciting, except that there's, of course, lots of nonsense in there, because on the Incunabula hashtag you also get knitting instructions for Incunabula cardigans, whatever that is. Perhaps I should get me one for Christmas. But, and then there are, of course, the fake news. Which someone,
I got it.
Yeah, I destroyed it here. The fake news when someone goes into a library and finds an old book and thinks, wow, I found an incunable. Well, this guy certainly did not, because this copy of the Hungarian Chronicle had been on the record for ages, only he didn't know. And he didn't
was that your reply at the top?
No, if I had a Twitter account, I would have replied, but it sort of went viral because people were saying, yeah, another lost book recovered. And had they looked into the ICC or GW or even into Incunabula and Dutch libraries, they would have seen that this copy at this Amsterdam Institute here for Social Research, which is part of the Dutch Academy of Sciences, and had as such been recorded for quite a while. But this guy was just like taken away by his own success. We still have to break the news to him that it's not a lost copy at all. Except it could be a second one, perhaps, but I don't think it is. Okay, but now it's getting a bit more serious. The really main and first source of finding new incunable is looking at old ones that have been digitized, right? In the past 10 years since I've been in charge of the GW, more than 16,500 incunable editions have been digitized and put online. I mean, even more have been digitized and put online, but the GW database now has 16,500 references to one or more digitized copies. So that means more than half the editions listed in the GW are already available online. And in these digitization programs, of course, a number of interesting things show up, especially when these programs are not accompanied by appropriate cataloging and metadata providing. Here are just some, we have very small examples of various larger digitization projects, such as the Munich, the largest one with over 8,100 digitized items. Then there's the Biblioteca Italiana, which has about 1,100 or so incunabula digitized, I think. The Swiss still running and work in progress program is called ERARA, which is a sidekick to the eCodices program.
And it features printed books from the 15th to the 18th century, about 550 incunabula now, but they are really adding more and more every day. And then there's, of course, your very own Bodleian project here, 600 or so incunabula that are put together with the Vatican, who have provided another 600. So very, very substantial programs, and there are many more like this. My own library, the Berlin State Library, now has a what we call an incunabula digitization master plan, and we are doing what some libraries have been doing in the past couple of years. We are not digitizing our highlights, but we are doing gap hopping, as it were. So where other people did not have, or we have unique holdings, we put that online, disregarding the value or the textual status or whatever. We're not so much interested in highlight digitization, but in filling the gaps that researchers have complained about, which is obviously extremely important for German studies, because we have one of the major holdings of German language in our library. And we are progressing steadily. And one, and every now and then, really interesting stuff turns up. So this is a small, I don't know whether it's small, it's a university in Maryland, and it's university library. Back in 1971, they acquired one of these ominous fragment boxes from some dirt corner from an antiquarian. Actually, they acquired it from H.P. Krause, the famous New York antiquarian, who must have, we think, inherited it ages ago from the Rosenthal firm at Munich, because these boxes have been turning up in various libraries, and there are collections of them. This consists of about three dozen fragments, many of which are very interesting because they are not just leaves torn out of missals or Bibles, but they are proof sheets on the one hand, and they are highly strange things like this here. I don't know whether you can see that, but this is a broadside with a vernacular text from Ulm. The text itself is dated 1479, and the page is printed twice over. So that is something that we really have not seen all too often. And this is an unknown incunable broadside pronouncing some city statutes, something that is also not been recorded for Ulm, and not for other cities in this kind before. So out of the 36 or so fragments in this inconspicuous holding, there are at least three or four things that have given us completely new insights. For example, proof sheets with correction marks, which is very rare. And this sort of strange double printing, which must have belonged to an edition that probably never saw the light of day. And I don't even remember how we got to look at the College Park University Library's website, but somehow once someone ended up there, and there we were. It was all by chance. Many of this is happening by chance, but still. Not so much by chance was what actually the first finding that I remember of an unrecorded incunable, which to the great chagrin of our colleagues at Munich came from the Bavarian State Library. During their digitization program, they noticed, of course, as they knew before, that very many fragments in the bindings were also digitized together with the books themselves, but had not been properly recorded in their incunabula catalog, because it were too many. So it turned out that this here on the left-hand side, in a German edition of the Tundalus narrative, was just a fragment of two pages. And somebody had already noted it down here. You probably not can see it, but it says this is Hein number 15545. So they identified it with an edition that had already been cataloged, but it isn't, because Hein 15545 is also in the Bavarian State Library, And if you look very closely, especially here at the margins, you see that there are a lot of variants here, and that goes on at the on the backside and in the other fragment as well. You can see words that are written completely different, like Zierunge here and there. And so it became pretty clear pretty quickly that this is must be a different edition from this Schopser that had already been there. And what's more, if one, I mean, this could have been a proof sheet that had been thrown away after printing and then corrected or changed, and this could be the final outcome. So this would not be really be an alternative or other edition. But if you look at the borders of the woodcut here, especially here and here and down here, becomes evident that this woodcut is much more worn than this one. So this must be a pretty later, pretty much later impression. This is one of the methodical wonderful ideas that have come up in the past couple of years or decades, that you cannot see if an edition is first or last by looking at the text, not in too many cases, but you can by looking at the wearing off of the woodcuts. This one has broken out passages here that indicating that this woodcut had been in use for quite some time, and this is completely intact. So this, I would say that this is the last rest of an edition that Schopser did a couple of years after this one, and it's all that survived from this. I mean, all these German vernacular history books are rare, if not unique, and so it is not a surprise that one just survives in two pages like this one here. And this is the most recent finding from last month, from one of the ERARA cataloging projects, a German prognostic for 1483, and that is a typical finding situation today. So one page in the back of this volume and one in the front. It's still pasted in, so you can't see the backside. But given that there are so many prognostications and almanacs and calendrical stuff that only show up in this form, one of our colleagues has gone the long way to learn by heart all the astronomical data, so that when he looks at the calendar dates here for full moons and stuff like that, he can easily say for which year that is, and by comparing it with already printed editions for the same year, you can find out about the author, even if he is not mentioned, like in this case, Vitus Gerow, which is a Southwestern author whose works are mainly only known from these printed fragments. And so it continues. Probably next week I have new findings to report, but hopefully not, because it all takes a lot of time to analyze. And then there are the complete copies that have been integrated into digitization programs with no one bothering to find out whether they had been cataloged before. Mm-hmm. The Biblioteca Catalunya in Barcelona is a wonderful example. They have much more incunabula than had been on the record. And among these, and they've digitized them all. They have got good metadata, but not with references to incunabula repertories. So the problem is that things are there, and you have no way of knowing, is that already a known one or an unknown one? So this, as it quickly turned out, was an unknown indulgence printed around 1487. And looking almost the same as all the other indulgences printed by the same printer around the same time, but only almost. So you have to compare them letter by letter and then see that there are variants every now and then. And that is a relatively quick procedure. The text is not very long. Thanks for that. And then there are surprises such as this one, where a complete illustrated edition of a fully dated or almost fully dated text by the not very proliferant printer Nicolaus Spindler in Valencia also showed up in the Catalunya holdings. that hasn't found its way into the ICC as of yet, but there are other examples. And it's quite, this is a 40-leaf or so booklet, so not a giant publication, but not a broadside either. So hard to explain how that could have been overlooked for until the unlucky guy at the GW draw the short stick and had to do the Catalunya digitization assessment. So now it has been strange and it's getting stranger, I can tell you. There are, of course, in the GW database are lots of linked data and links to other repertories, of course, such as ISTC, and on a lesser count, it's ED16, and now also we're adding USTC links every now and then, so the Universal Short Title Catalog, where they refer to editions that are otherwise not recorded in ISTC because, or in ED16 because they are 16th century holdings. And then, of course, there are automatic links to the BOD ink, the BSB ink, and to two very new and quite remarkable undertakings. One of these is called Cycle, that is Spanish editions of classical texts. This is a database that is work in progress now. There are only 9 editions now listed in the GW until now, but they have a database of about 120 works with very detailed descriptions in parts, not all of them, because it's still work in progress. And then the other one is a very very good database from Genève, Genf, the GLN, where we have had just 4 links added now, but there are about 50 or 60 or so. And these are just a couple of examples of databases that are on the one hand reliable, on the other hand easily understandable and can be interlinked to other databases. So certainly a way for the future, because we can outsource lots of work if you want to know about copy descriptions, for example. For Spanish classical editions, Cycle will be the place to go because they've got lots of descriptions with book in hand experience, just as May is doing. And so that's probably just a small part, but an important part of the data that need to be processed. Then there are 2 major German databases that are currently, or one of it is currently in restructuring, the other is already finished, and I would like to see whether that works. At least show you the second one, the M. Just a second. MRFH database, for which the GW provides all 140 or so links to their entry. That is a repertory on translated texts of the early German humanism, and you see the links are here. And these are very substantial and very well done bibliographical descriptions and copy descriptions with links to digitized images, many of which are not published officially, but they've just taken them from the libraries and put them online without making too much fuss about it, right? So so that is very, very helpful, especially as they have been searching for fragments, they have been searching for also for manuscript copies of printed books, and there are, as you can see, there are differentiations between various issues and redactions and so on. So this is really a very good repertory which helps users of the GW database a lot to find out more about the individual copies. Especially as you can see, you have got lots of prominent authors like Heinrich Steinheul in here. So that is certainly something that the Germanists and philologists will be counting on. And the more we link, the more hits they get and the better for them and for us as well. So there may be more databases out there, such as the Handschriftenzensus, but this is just a project that is now in the process of being changed completely. It has now become an a long-term academy project, and so it's too early to say what their impact will be, but in 20 years' time, which is nothing at all for the GW, we will know a little bit more about this. And they will also add hyperlinks, especially for manuscript copies of printed books, right, which is a totally under-researched field. Okay, getting towards the end, but it's getting still stranger. Sorry for that. Now comes a private and personal hobby horse of mine, that's the archives. The German archival situation with regard to their content and of incunabula has been catastrophic, to say the least. More than 50 years ago, the famous incunabulist Ferdinand Geltner wrote an article, really a cry for help to archivists, saying there's so much interesting stuff in your archives, please help us. And about 50 years later, archivists heard the call, as it were, so about a couple of years ago, and there are now a variety of very, very interesting, but from our point of view, of course, completely unstructured online repertories, which contain A, information on copies, B, that have not been recorded, B, information on or digital images of copies that have not been recorded, and C, lots of substantial data having to do with the history of printing. Because they come from archival documents that have been printed somewhere or not, but have never been made searchable on the net. And there are three, especially. One is Monasterium, which is an international database with short summaries of medieval charters, from most of them from monasteries, but not all of them, and partially already with images. There is a steadily growing, really inter-European effort. The Archivportal D is now the large German portal for all things archival, where people, local and regional archives feed in their stuff on a regular basis, and there's also some digital images in there. And then there's also the Register Imperii Datenbank, which is the retro-converted data from the so-called Imperial Regist work, so that is the summaries of charters and archival records relating to all the German medieval emperors, up to Friedrich III and Maximilian, who of course are interesting players in the incunabula scene as well. So some findings from this. This is a Dutch broadside with an edict by Pope Alexander VI of 1494, located at the Landesarchiv Klagenfurt, probably not a place where Dutch bibliographers would search for a Dutch imprint, but there you go. Europe was big in the 15th century as well, very European. That is a, as you can see, a pretty remarkable, with a notary sign here and manuscript entry, a unique and for the first time recorded copy found in Monasterium in the series of charters from this archive in Austria. Next example, this here is not a finding of a print itself, but a reference in an archival source to a broadside from Nuremberg in 1491. And the interesting thing is that this short summary of this archival document tells us a lot of things about who had this this edition printed. Namely, it is a print commissioned by the emperor himself, which we did not know before. And second, that should be, he even names the printer. We knew about the printer, of course, but we didn't know that the emperor personally collected it. And then that it would have to be attached publicly in the city of Nuremberg, which is, of course, something that we really would like, always want to know what was the purpose of this decree. It had been recorded in the GW, there's a number of copies surviving, but this whole context had been unknown until by chance we found this reference in the database. Of course, all these archival databases do not care for our terminology. So if you
type in incurable, they don't even ask you, did you mean incurable? They probably give you nothing at all with the reference to that. So what I'm doing is I'm looking for combinations of terms like Friedrich, Maximilian, Druck, Einblattdruck, whatever term springs to mind. It's a lot of tentative searching around without a structured possibility of structured searching, because this was of course not made for us incunabulists, but for people, for historians who are looking for completely different things, right? Then there's the Regester Imperii database, which also provides some interesting information. For example, just taking this because it's so nice, Emperor Maximilian, who has got a jubilee coming next year, by the way, he died in 1519, he had an ongoing dispute with the indulgence Cardinal Ferraudi, starting in 1480, in the late 1480s, and in 1504, he really had enough of Ferraudi's doing, noting in this charter, or in this, it's rather a letter to the municipal authorities of Strasbourg, saying that this Ferraudi person is publishing stuff that is really not good at all. All these printed writings that the cardinal is publishing are not amusing at all to His Majesty, and the Strasbourg printers are clandestinely publishing this stuff, and so sort of are doing propaganda or promoting a propaganda campaign against the emperor, which the emperor of course doesn't like at all. It is the crimen lese majestatis, which is not a completely innocent accusation. So all the printers who are part of this campaign will be put to jail, and their belongings will be confiscated. And also everybody who is spreading these writings in Strasbourg has to go to jail. Of course, nothing like that ever happened, because the magistrate in Strasbourg did not act accordingly. But there are a number of sources where you can see sharper than you could before what concrete impact the press had in conflict situations like this one. Of course, this data have all been published in the printed editions of the Regester Imperii. But show me one person who read all these printed editions of the, it's like 50 meters of dry German Regestenprosa. To be able to find this in a database, if you look, for example, for the word gedruckt or gedruckten or drucke or whatever, it gives you a long list of very, very interesting hits that you would never find, even if you would read all this stuff. And so we're almost at the end. Yeah, I wanted to show you just a couple of findings from the Landesarchiv in Duisburg. They have about 30 incunabula broadsides, which we went through in the past 2 years or so, and 5 of these are unrecorded, or were unrecorded, which is not a bad quota, including this one here, which we haven't been able to determine what it is exactly about. It is a very early Cologne print that needs to be processed, and the others are mostly edicts by the aforementioned Emperor Maximilian. Then there's Marburg Staatsarchiv, where an intern, a PhD student of history, actually dug out one of these boxes from the dirty corners and found a lot of indulgence prints in there. Actually, these come from a regular file, but the box in the dirty corner provided, among other things, 6 scraps from an unrecorded Donatus in the B42 type, which means this guy has found a Gutenberg edition there, right? That's the second state of the type, so we've been able to put things together and to sort of exclude that it comes from one of the already known editions. Not a bad booty for this guy and for us. And this is all stuff that is still going on, because especially at Marburg and other archives, there must be massive holdings that have never been looked into from late 15th century, mainly from court records, and of course scraps from bindings and stuff that have been preserved over the centuries, just like these little Donatus records, which are not much bigger than a large stem. And then of course you get the one problem that's always, that you always have to deal with, is you have to go quite a long way. If the information just says this is an original on vellum printed in German, and then you get a date of 15 December 1488. So not more than that. No databases, not our databases, certainly tell us that anything published by this Archbishop Berthold von Henneberg, the Mainz Archbishop, nothing published under this date is yet known to us. So that's the end of the digital fascination, because then you have to go to the archive or order an image in the archive, because not all this stuff has been put online yet. We hope that we can nudge them in the right direction, and for the time being, that's the end of story. Thank you very much.
Thank you.